All right, so last week we watched the 2021 Around the World in 80 Days show, and it seemed pretty cool. All the actors were especially good. Obviously, it's a modern production with all the bells and whistles and stuff. But my only concern with it, we only watched the first episode so far, but my only concern was that maybe it seemed like it was potentially a little overdramatic, because to me, Around the World in 80 Days is, a fairly whimsical story, hot air balloons and whatever. Jules Verne stuff. And that first episode, at least, see last episode for details, but it had some pretty heavy drama-rama moments. So just as we were talking about that, it came up that there's this 1956 version, this movie, that not only is from a more whimsical time, but it also won an Academy Award. So we thought, hey, maybe we should, for Best Picture even. So we thought, hey, maybe we should check this out just to see what the older version of this story is like as compared to the new one.
Didn't you tell me it had six nominations? I don't think it won six prizes, but.
Yeah, no, I think it did actually. It won five Academy Awards, including Best Picture.
Five Academy Awards. Okay. Yeah, I thought you said it. I didn't know if it was nominations or it had actually won.
And I don't actually have a ton of info about this. This seems to be a recurring thing with Around the World in 80 Days stuff. Is I don't know how much there is to say about it. It's just, it's based on the classic 1873 novel. This one, 1956, American epic adventure comedy film starring David Niven. And it also, I guess I won't bother going through the whole list of people that are in this movie because he's Phileas Fogg. But apparently, this is one of those like ensemble films. There's like 60 famous people in this movie. So, yeah, I guess we'll just see as we go through. I'm sure you'll recognize more than I do, but I might even recognize some of them if there's that many. And yeah, like I said, it won five Academy Awards, including Best Picture. However, where a problem came up as I was looking into this is it appeared that this film is 3 hours long. And I was like, is that right? What the heck? And that brought back memories of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which was also from this same approximate era and was also a bit of a whimsical, world-spanning comedy type thing with tons and tons of cameos. And that one was not worth it. That was not worth the 3 hours. So I was a little concerned about that in this case of like, is this really true? But what I managed to do, because it is unfortunately, they're not kidding, it really is 3 hours. They just did this back in the day. Every once in a while, they just made a movie that was way too long. But it turns out that there is an intermission, which is fair enough, for a movie that long. But they left the intermission in the movie. So I snipped out the intermission, so that cut 10 or 11 minutes. And then the credits at the end of this movie, it was the longest credit sequence ever made up to this point. The credits alone are like 6 or 7 minutes. So.
Well, I have to, I suppose they had to give accolades to everybody, all the famous people that they have in the show.
So basically, once I cut the credits and I cut the intermission, that took it way down. And then I split it in half. So we're still going to have to watch this movie in two halves as though it's like two episodes of a show, but each one is only about 1 hour 20. So that doesn't seem as bad. We'll watch the first half. We'll take a break. Then we'll watch the second half.
Now that you're mentioning it, this seems to have been a thing for a lot of those movies in the late 60s, I'm going to say. Ben-Hur, intermission. Cleopatra, intermission. There's all kinds of them that, yeah, that would seem to be the formula. Make a great long epic type movie, Gone with the Wind, that was another one, and have big long introduction, have an intermission in the middle, which was probably 10 minutes, I suppose, music played and all this stuff. And then you have the big long ending with everybody's names at the end. Yeah, I bet if you did a search of how many movies have intermissions in them, they'd all be placed in the late 1960s.
Or 50s in this case, mid-50s.
Well, okay, let's say the 50s, late 50s, early 60s, not late 60s, but early 60s, somewhere probably between 1956 and 1963, 64.
Yeah, in fact, even just this very year, because I was a little curious, because I don't always trust the Academy, just because something won Best Picture. I just don't really trust that they have the best taste, because I'll never forget this, but in my own life, like my perfect year for my youth of like the peak of movies was 1994, 1994 was the year The Shawshank Redemption came out, which I think is easily in the shortlist of best movies ever made. I love that movie so much. But also that year was Pulp Fiction, which I feel like is overrated, but is good. You know, if you're like a movie hipster, that's the movie. Yet the movie that won Best Picture was dumbass Forrest Gump, which that movie has aged like milk. That movie sucks. So I really...
Oh, I love Forrest Gump. Now, I loved Forrest Gump.
Compared to Shawshank? I mean, if you had to pick which one of those two movies should win an Academy Award, you want this simple man who stumbles through historical events while his girlfriend bangs everyone? Come on.
Yeah, but a lot of Forrest Gump would have appealed to Academy people because all those historical references would have meant something to them.
Sure.
The other thing, though, that I do have to agree with you on is sometimes the Academy would give an Academy Award to a movie that if this movie has like any number of stars in it, you can't give the award to all those stars because there's just too many of them. And they probably aren't deserving of it anyway. But by giving it to the movie that they are all in, you are giving accolades to all of those stars. So you really cover a whole lot of bases by recognizing a movie that is promoting all of those people. So I agree, it may be a piece of crap, but they were able to give accolades to who knows how many actors and actresses just by giving Best Picture to this movie. But hey, maybe it's good.
And sometimes they give an award to someone, almost like a Lifetime Achievement Award. You know, they'll give an award to a famous director, but even though it's not his best movie. But I don't know. In the case of 1994, I mean, Shawshank has just become stronger and stronger with every year that passes. It's more and more clear that that is an all-time classic. Meanwhile, Jenny, you know, like Forrest Gump's a fun movie to watch on TV on a Saturday afternoon. It's not a deep movie. It's
to each his own.
I mean, I watched it too. I had an all right time, but anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that in this same year that Around the World in 80 Days won Best Picture, The King and I came out, as well as The Ten Commandments. So stiff competition. But where I got onto this about the length, The Ten Commandments is 3 hours and 40 minutes. It's even longer than this movie.
And it has a big intermission in the middle of it. And who's the other one you mentioned, Ben-Hur?
The King and I.
The King and I. I think The King and I also has all that big pomp and ceremony and a big intermission in the middle. So that seemed to be a thing. I don't know why. I mean, it sounds like if you're doing a stage show, yes, you have intermissions. But in movies, all of a sudden, it seemed to come out in that period. They were doing these big epic movies with all kinds of pomp and ceremony and scenery and chariot races and that sort of thing. And you had to throw an intermission in to give people a break. Get out to the popcorn stand, get yourself another thing of popcorn and pop.
Yeah, and if anything, I kind of miss the intermission because, yeah, we still to this day have the occasional very long movie that it wouldn't hurt to have a little break in the middle of Lord of the Rings or whatever. But I kind of feel like the nail in the coffin of the intermission was Monty Python and the Holy Grail, because that movie was very short. It didn't need an intermission, but it had one as a joke. You know, so I think that was kind of the end of intermissions. But I guess I'll ask you while we're here, because I don't know these other two movies, these other two nominees. There was a Civil War movie called Friendly Persuasion.
Don't know that one.
And then the other one is a Western called Giant.
Yes. Oh, Giant was quite a big name. It had Rock Hudson and Elizabeth Taylor and Giant. I think it may have had James Dean in it. James Dean, the maybe the last movie that he made before he was killed in that car accident. And it's about Texas and oil wells and wealthy people kind of building up the Texas economy because they had discovered oil. It was good. What I remember of it was good. Very good.
So, yeah, basically that's where, it's a little unsure of, like, it's a good sign that this movie won the Best Picture, but, you know, that doesn't, you know, especially against these other films, that doesn't you know, the Academy doesn't necessarily know what they're talking about, so who knows, because these are also extremely famous, well-regarded movies that were probably equally as deserving, so who knows. And I just still can't help but be nervous that, you know, because this does seem like it's going to be what I was looking for, a more soft, whimsical version of Around the World in 80 Days, but the length is... I just can't stop thinking of it's a mad, 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 mad world. Because if you remember when we watched that movie, we were watching it at your law office on the weekend, and you had a weekend appointment, a rare, like, person could only come in on the weekend. So normally we would stop the movie. But in the case of that one, we've been watching it for like 2 hours already. And you were like, just let it go. Who cares? And yeah, like for the next 35, 40 minutes, I watched it and I didn't even, it wasn't even hard to catch you up on what happened. Like, man, that was a long movie. So I got to admit, I'm a little nervous about, I don't know, I feel like a big epic Ten Commandments Ben-Hur type movie seems more appropriate. It's weird how they would make these lighthearted comedies that were 3 hours. Like, that's a weird thing to do. So we'll see.
But if they're trying to be true to the original story, it might take that long. After all, the TV series with David Tennant in it, that's going to take 8 hours.
That is true. That's very true. I was thinking that myself, that it is, a lot of it is just the your expectation based on the medium. And, you know, again, we're not sitting in the theater. We're not stuck there for 3 hours. We're, you know, we're going to split it in half and just watch it like a TV show. So that should help a lot.
Well, let's start it up and see what it's like. I mean, it may be a piece of crap, or it may be absolutely fabulous.
Jules Verne wrote many books. He was able to transfer his soaring imagination to print. His predictions were bold. What he wrote was regarded as fantastic fiction, but much of it has become fact. Flying machines, submarines, television.
And yeah, so this is the point where it was the longest credit sequence in any film up to this point. It's like 7 minutes, so I cut it. So we don't have to watch that.
Oh, what an awful movie.
I was thinking, it's like, you remember that story, like the monkey's paw, you know, where you make a wish, but then you get your wish, but it turns out it's not what you really wanted. That's what I feel like happened, because when we watched the current day, the 2021 version of Around the World in 80 Days, I said that I was a little concerned about the drama parts, you know, that it seemed a little overly heightened and that I kind of wished there was a version that wasn't a dramatic version. And I got to take that back. I guess I should watch my words, because that's exactly what this was. This is the version of Around the World in 80 Days with almost no conflict and no drama. And man, it's long. Just like, wow.
And disjointed. Terribly disjointed. Oh.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen a movie this kind of, I don't know, like slice of life is the wrong word, because they are going to these exotic locales and you do get to see all these places. But yeah, it's like deliberate. Like, there is a very deliberate choice to make sure that, like, I don't know if Phileas Fogg even broke a sweat at any point during this whole adventure. I don't know if a single bead of sweat formed on his forehead ever. You know, it's like, that's a truly weird way to tell this story.
And throughout the movie, he should have been very, always continually conscious of time and how he could squeeze all of this into such a limited time phase, but he really doesn't seem all that fazed by it. I mean, he does mention at one point that he kept it all. He's on that boat at the end going back to England, and he says he's kept, or no, I guess he says it after he arrives in England, that he kept it all recorded. But you never see him recording it. You never see him taking out his watch and saying, my God, we're not going to make it. Nothing.
And I think that's what I would say if I was to revise my statement. You know, when I said that I like shows that don't have conflict or that don't have plot, and that I kind of prefer that style of storytelling, that's not quite right, I guess, because I've seen what that looks like, and that's not what I want either. Really, what I would want is for the drama and the stress put on the characters just to be placed in a different place. Like in the 2021 version, for example, instead of the stress of French revolutions and things, I just would prefer if the stress were placed on the travel itself, you know, like that's where I would focus the drama. And that's what's weird about this version is this version doesn't do either. You know, it doesn't have any particular plots. And if it does, like when they rescued the princess halfway through in India, or even when they fight the natives in America, it's just like weird. They just skip over details and they sort of smooth over. Oh, I guess this person's saved now. Oh, I guess that's over. I guess that's done. Like, just the pacing was the weirdest thing in the world. Meanwhile, they'll show the entire balloon flight in luxurious detail, or an entire dance in Spain, or an entire bullfight. What a weird movie.
And of course, introducing the cast of thousands, and you get the impression that they're only put in there just for these cameo appearances. They don't add anything to the substance of the movie or the pressure that they would be under. There's none of that. It's just like these guys are in there and they give a few little lines and then they're done.
Yeah, so that's another thing I looked up is that, yeah, this idea, because the other movie like this that we watched was It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which also had, you know, like 40 or 50 famous people in it and was also 3 hours long and was also pointless and kind of boring. So it seems like this is a recipe to make a long meandering movie. But one thing that is kind of interesting is that apparently this was the first movie to do that, where they took famous people and treated them like extras, which is kind of a novel thing to do. It's kind of a neat thing to do. And yeah, we were sort of trying to figure out as we watched it, like how did this movie get nominated for Best Picture, let alone win it? And I do think your theory about that is the one that makes the most sense. It's like, it's just a nice opportunity to give 40 famous people a Best Picture Oscar all in one fell swoop, because there's no way this movie... You know, I was saying last week that I thought Forrest Gump was not as good as Shawshank, but obviously Forrest Gump is still an extremely well-made film. This is like a whole different thing. This truly did not deserve to be Best Picture.
No, this movie is a piece of crap.
And when I looked into the production a little more, I mean, obviously it's a big undertaking, but they did go to 13 different countries. They filmed in the real locations, and they did the whole thing in 75 days, which is extremely difficult, short time period to do this in. But it does seem like they got to each country, and then they just meandered around and filmed a bunch of nothing for a really long time, and then they just edited it a little bit. Like, it would be so easy to edit this movie down to 2 hours, and you would literally not lose anything. Every scene is way too long. And like, at first it was okay. I feel like the first hour that we watched this, we were like, oh, well, this is, you know, it's more like a travel show or something. It's more like a, I don't know, just like a nice ambient image of these different places than it is a movie. But then, yeah, once you get to hour two and hour three, it's like, wow, yeah, this is just not the way to do this. This is not a good film.
Well, and you can't just have scenes that could have a lot of excitement in them, and you build up the excitement. For example, rescuing the princess from the burning pyre, Passepartout tied to a wooden stake with the native people setting a fire under him. But then all of a sudden, they never show how do they rescue these people. It's just they're in the burning pyres, or going to go to the burning fire, and next thing they're on a boat or on a train or they're. Like, you can't just do that. If you're building up that much excitement and putting all that energy into that excitement, show how you did it. I mean, well, just don't move on. Oh, yeah, we rescued him. He's on the train now, or she's on the boat now, or it was just awful.
Yeah, so that was strange as well. Yeah, that's what makes it double strange, is that this was clearly no accident. Like, this director very clearly set out to make this movie, you know, like he knew what he wanted to focus on, which was all the wrong things. And this is clearly the pace that he wanted. Yeah. And again, just to compare it to the new show is just the fundamentals of who the characters are is, I don't even think you could put a number on it. You know, it's not 100 times better. It's not 1,000 times better. It's infinite better of, you know, just the idea that Passepartout is the street smart guy who can make things happen and can hold this adventure together. And Fogg is the fastidious rich guy who he wants to do it. He thinks he's got the gumption. He's got that adventurous spirit, but in reality, he's not at all prepared for this, and he just gets seasick and whatever. And that's a good balance. That's a good mix, where in this movie, it was kind of the opposite. Passepartout was pretty fucking useless. He didn't really do anything but bumble around and get in the way. And Fogg was like the perfect man. He just made no mistakes. He was totally nonplussed the whole time. He wasn't even concerned that he wouldn't be able to do this. And again, I'm not sure how it relates to the novel, but the new interpretation of these characters is way, way, way better.
Yeah, they have some depth. All of these characters were all very superficial. Your typical rich guy who thinks he knows everything. But in this movie, he does know everything. And nothing upsets him. Even at the very end when he's lost the bet, it's like he's standing around a little morose. Well, I won't have my cup of tea. But he's just so one level. He has no character to him at all. He doesn't even take out his watch at any point in time and say, oh, man, I don't think we're going to make it. Nothing. He just carries on wearing his dapper suits wherever he goes. I can't even say any more about it. It was just awful. I was willing to give it the benefit of the doubt at the beginning, but at the end of it, I would never watch that movie again if I was paid to do it. Or if I did, I'd have headphones or something, and so I could be doing something else at the same time.
I'm sure there are some film nerds out there who have compiled lists of, like, least deserving Academy Award winners for Best Picture, but this is certainly on the short list. I mean, there's a lot of winners I've not seen, but yeah, very, very, very undeserving. Meanwhile, though, this was so long that we actually took a break in the middle and we did watch the second episode of the 2021 show. And yeah, I'd say it seems like it's even kind of, especially compared to this interpretation, which was not at all what I wanted, the 2021 version, it seems like it's kind of writing itself a bit, because I was concerned at first that like the stuff with Passepartout's family was a little too dramatic. Where in episode 2, the way they did it is they still had a dramatic problem. They had a train that had to get across a broken or a very unstable train bridge because a kid needed to get to the hospital and whatever. And it was neat because you get to see what Fogg does bring to the table, you know, that he can do calculations and he can figure stuff out. And he's got severe weaknesses, but he also has, you know, big upsides that other people, he can figure out stuff other people can't. So it still had the drama, but it was kind of bringing it into again, it's like focusing the drama on the travel more. And that's exactly what I wanted. So yeah, thumbs up to the 2021 show. It's going very well. And yeah, thumbs down to the 1956 version, which was just a weird film.
I never had a lot of respect necessarily for Academy Award choices anyway. They always seemed to be very politically motivated. Or money motivated or something or other. But I'm telling you, if that was a winner in 1956, man, they really hit the bottom of the bucket.
Yeah, and we, you know, as we mentioned in the preamble, there was one of the other movies we weren't familiar with, but basically all the other nominees were clear potential winners. So there has to be, who knows how the Academy works, but it doesn't work clearly, whatever system they're using.
No, I have no doubt in my mind that was their flag to everybody who was a cameo appearance in there. By doing that, by giving it to that movie, they were saying giving accolades to all those actors in the guild.
Yeah, and again, I feel like the closest comparison as far as stuff we've watched, especially for this podcast, is It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World. Because again, it was just a long movie that spanned a big adventure with a whole giant cast. And it wasn't any good either. I was not a fan of that movie at all. But it's a lot better than this movie. So it's like, yeah, I don't know how much further down the hole you can get. This is pretty bad. So yeah, again, I guess the only way I could see this movie, like I could see using it in place of a fireplace, put it on in the background just as something to glance at once in a while if you want to see different locales, you know, just like, oh, look, now they're here, now they're there. But yeah, you should never sit down and try to focus on this movie.
I wouldn't even give it that much. If I wanted to do that, I'd go and get some pictures of travels around the world. The hell with this thing.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. I'm just, I was reaching for the only thing I could think of. And yeah, it's not even great at that. It's still not the first choice for that.
The only thing I can reach for is it stinks.
All right, yeah, let's just end with that. You can't beat that.